Hello.
Podcast Network Asia.
You are listening to part one of a three-part series called Resident Evil, A Killer in the House, on the last 24 hours.
With the pandemic still in full swing, chances are, just like me, you're home, or mostly home, physically in front of your computer, but spiritually sunbathing on a beach in Palawan, cocktail in hand. Regardless of how you're dealing with the current situation, it's clear that our homes have become our sanctuary in more profound ways than one. Our shelter from heat, pollution, rain, rabid stray animals, and now possible death from an infectious disease. Home is where we are most comfortable, protected, and safe. So where will you go if somehow evil makes its way in? Worse, what if it's been inside with you all along, waiting to redecorate the walls with the blood of everyone you love, and turn your house of rest into a house of horrors? In this three-part episode of The Last 24 Hours, we meet the people whose homes have become the tragic site of unimaginable violence and death. An open house walkthrough, if you dare, into the gruesome events that led two unsuspecting families to their horrific deaths, transforming their dream homes into their graves. So ring the doorbell and open the door to part one of Murder House, where we first entered the beautiful home of the Gonzalez family in North Ryde, Australia, the scene of a bloodbath. By all accounts, the Gonzalez family on No. 6 Collins Street was your typical immigrant success story. Originally from Benguet, Baguio, the family emigrated to Australia after the 1990 Luzon earthquake reduced their hotel business into rubble. After settling in Sydney, the family patriarch, 46-year-old Teodoro Teddy Gonzalez, requalified as a lawyer and set up a successful law office where he specialized as an immigration lawyer. His wife, 43-year-old Claridades Gonzalez, also worked at the family law office, and the mother to two of their kids, Seth, who was 21 years old, and Claudine, who had just turned 18. On the outside, they seemed like any normal Filipino family. They were close-knit and were devout Catholics. Both Claridades and Teodoro were also very involved in their kids' education and personal life. Seth, who at the time was pursuing a Bachelor of Arts degree at the Macquarie University, was expected to eventually take up law studies and help with growing the family business. Their home, located in the middle-class neighborhood of North Ryde, reflected the family's success. North Ryde is considered to be a safe and pleasant place, and the house itself, built on a quarter-acre plot, is a modern and tasteful four-bedroom with a two-car garage. Claridades herself took pride in decorating their dream home, and as a devout Catholic, she had an altar to Our Lady Queen of Peace installed at the top of the stairs. It was the perfect place to raise a family and plant roots. On July 10, 2001, a ruthless killer made it his perfect place for murder. According to news reports, Claudine was studying in her room at around 4:30 p.m., when she was savagely attacked. She was hit at least six times in the head with a baseball bat and then strangled. The blows were so vicious that her blood splattered across the room and the bat left deep dents on the wall. But her killer wasn't finished just yet. In fact, he'd only just begun. Using two knives from their kitchen, he finished Claudine off by stabbing her five times in the neck and twice in the abdomen. Before making his way downstairs, the killer covered her body with a red jacket. An hour later, Claridades came home from a day of helping out at the law office when the attacker struck as she entered the house. With barely any time to even put down her handbag or slip off her shoes, the killer pounced on her, landing multiple stab wounds to her face, neck, chest, and abdomen. His final ferocious blow severed her windpipe. Then, as Claridades lay bleeding on the floor, the killer waited. His final victim arrived home just before 7 p.m. Teodoro had just closed the front door when he was assaulted with violent blows to his neck, chest, and abdomen. One stab wound struck his right lung, then his heart. One stab wound landed so deep, it partially severed his spinal cord. At around 11:48 p.m. that same day, nearly 4 hours after the killer attacked Teodoro, Seth the eldest would come home to discover the horrific scene. He tearfully called emergency services and told them that his family had been killed. Witnesses claimed that he frantically ran to the neighbor's house and told them that his parents had been shot. Days later, Seth would make an emotional appeal on TV, asking the killer or killers to come forward and offer the reward of $100,000 for any information that would help the police.
"It is difficult to explain the love and ties in my family,"
Seth said at a police conference. He continued by adding,
"If you were to picture the four corners of the world, in my world, we were four. The three corners of my world are now gone," he said.
The Sydney Morning Herald reported that the young man was overcome with grief. 10 days later, on July 20th, Seth buried his mom, dad, and sister in an emotional funeral where he delivered the eulogy and performed an a cappella rendition of the Boys to Men Mariah Carey duet, One Sweet Day. It was meant to be a touching scene. Instead, many of the attendees found it rather strange. In the coming months, strange would give way to shock as more details about the violent slaughter of the Gonzalez family on No. 6 Collins Street would eventually reveal the identity of their cold-blooded killer. We want to say hi and big thanks to the guys from Kumu. Kumu is a Pinoy live streaming app where you can connect with Filipino streamers and celebrities. Use our link in the description below to follow some Kumu streamers. Based on the initial evidence, New South Wales police investigators assumed that the murders were part of a botched robbery attempt. To help them reconstruct violent events of the day, they asked Seth to walk them through his actions on the night that he found his family. According to News 7 Australia, Seth told the police that on July 10th, he went out with his friend Sam Dacilio in the city. He picked up Sam at about 8 p.m., headed for dinner at Planet Hollywood, and then continued to play games at a local arcade. They finished their evening at around 11:30 p.m., after which Seth dropped his friend off at his place, and then he drove back home. Seth stated that he was confronted with a blood-soaked scene as soon as he opened the door. His family butchered and the words, "Fuck off Asians, KKK," spray-painted on the living room wall. It's not clear if he called emergency services before or after he approached the bodies, but he told the police that he found his father first. He said,
"I went to him and kneeled down. I was screaming for my father. I was holding him. I was trying to hug him. I was trying to wake him up. Then I ran to my mother. I was hugging her and trying to wake her as well. My first instinct was to try and resuscitate her in some way."
After failing to revive his parents, Seth went looking for his sister. He made his way to her room and said that as soon as he went in, he felt the door hit her body. He then slowly pushed it open, worried that he might further harm her. He added,
"There was blood gushing from her side and I tried to stop it by using my hands."
As the lone survivor of the Gonzalez family, Seth put up a brave face as he went through the crime scene walkthrough with the police. However, his statement regarding his sister's gushing wound would be the first of many to set off alarm bells for the investigators. Specifically, Seth's statement doesn't fit the time and manner of Claudine's death. Coroners estimated Claudine's time of death to be between 4:30 to 5 p.m. Seth found her body at midnight, and blood doesn't gush when you're already dead. Forensic examination of the clothing he wore on the day he discovered his family only had fine smears of blood, which is inconsistent with his statement. Given the amount of blood at the crime scene, and particularly since he claimed to have attempted to resuscitate his parents by giving them CPR, there were also no signs of forced entry, and despite superficial signs of ransacking, nothing of value was missing including the cash found on Claridades and Teodoro. Also, given that the deaths occurred over a three-hour period, investigators found it unusual that thieves would hang around the crime scene for that long. The robbery-gone-wrong theory was beginning to fall apart. What the investigators knew, however, was that in their experience, the prime suspect in a domestic setting murder are usually the closest to the victims. They shifted their focus on Seth Gonzalez himself and began by asking him his whereabouts between 4:30 to 8 p.m., the time of the murders. Conveniently, he provided them with two alibis. Actually, he provided the police with two alibis and a theory. Seth suggested that a businessman with an axe to grind against his father could have ordered his family's murder, but gave them little else information that would help them pursue it as a credible lead. The police quickly abandoned that angle. Seth claimed that during the time of the attack, he was driving around Blacktown looking for a friend's place. However, two people would place his car, a distinctive green Ford Festiva with the license plate SEF80G, in the family garage between 4:10 and 4:30 p.m., when a client of his father dropped off documents in their mailbox, and then again at 6 p.m. by his Aunt Emily, who saw the car after she dropped by and rang the doorbell. Suddenly, things were unraveling for Seth Gonzalez. Is it possible that this sweet and loving baby-faced young man is somehow involved in the violent murder of his family? His second alibi certainly seemed to prove otherwise. Ashamed and embarrassed to admit that he had been with a prostitute given his strict Catholic upbringing, Seth claimed that he was at a Chatswood brothel on the day of his family's murder and had taken a taxi over. For the investigators, Seth, as the guilt-ridden former altar boy and singer in a liturgical choir, seemed like a believable character. In the coming months, however, they would come to know the real Seth behind the good Catholic boy facade. The one who met with his father's accountant within 72 hours of the murder to find out how much money they had. The one who would put a deposit on a Lexus, telling the car dealership that he would be using his inheritance to pay for the vehicles. The one who moved into a luxury high-rise apartment, pawn his dead mother's jewelry, sell his parents' cars without his grandparents' permission. Seth Gonzalez, the sole beneficiary of his parents' estimated $1.5 million assets across Australia and the Philippines.
Listen to the next episode of Resident Evil on The Last 24 Hours, where we discover the chilling true nature of Seth Gonzalez and follow his journey from grieving son to cold-blooded murderer.
Don't miss out on new episodes. Like, subscribe to The Last 24 Hours or follow the podcast on Facebook at Historia Ni Jet, where you can get in touch, tell me your thoughts, suggest cases, or just say hello. I'll do my best to get back to you.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.